Okay, everybody. Hi. Today is September the 9th, 2013. Actually, I'm thinking that the Seven Ray Institute was founded 28 years ago today. Well, we've been doing what we can to teach and spread the knowledge of the ageless wisdom, and especially to help develop esoteric psychology. This seems to be the area of our effort which has had the greatest success and the most interest, because it is so very important for disciples and aspirants to do their personal work. As has been said by the great psychologist Roberto Saggioli, he was said to have said when he was getting ready to pass on, make sure they do their personal work. Well, here we are dealing with that kind of thing. And we are in the Techniques of Integration webinar commentaries. We're in number 4 on page 350 in Esoteric Psychology 2. And we did notice, I put it in such big letters, that the focus of the soul activity, the unselfishly integrated man has the focus of soul activity in terms of contribution and not in terms of acquisition, which the selfishly integrated personality is oriented towards. So the progress of humanity is from one realized integration to another. We would say that it is not sufficient that these integrations take place only in the realm of activity, and in accordance with the third aspect. The second aspect of consciousness of divinity must be involved, the consciousness aspect. So man's basic integrity is, however, in the realm of consciousness, and I suppose that is what it means when we're talking about one realized integration after another. We have to understand what it is that we have included and harmonized and properly related within our energy system and in terms of our relationship to the ever-increasing encompassing wholes or contexts in which we find ourselves. So this is a statement of importance. It might be remarked, speaking loosely and generally, that in Lemurian times, humanity achieved the integration of the vital or etheric body with the physical body. And we can ask, to what extent was this realized? Well, Laya Yoga had its birth at this time, which was the yoga of the etheric body, the yoga of the centers. And there were somewhat advanced civilizations toward the end of the Lemurian times, at which point the solar angels knew that their divine intervention had succeeded, because they, we are told, were not certain of the success of their intervention at the time of individualization. So there is this integration within the vehicles of man. See, let's just say that the first integrations, I think it'll be time for a little integrations. Right. The first integrations are within the vehicles of the human being. And along with such integrations come partial integrations with the environment, based on life, vitality, activity. This first integration would have that type of orientation, not an integration with the emotional life around him, no, because the integration with the astral body had not yet occurred within the energy system of man. So Lemurian times were physical, vital times, not times when emotional sensitivity was predominant. In Atlantean times, humanity added to the already achieved synthesis, Notice how here the word synthesis is used for integration. So we oftentimes have this use of different words for something similar. This is not the specific definition of synthesis as used when it relates to the spirit per se. In Atlantean times, humanity added to the already achieved synthesis still another part, that of the astral nature, and psychic man came definitely into being. And we could say that before that time, we had physical, vital man. He was alive, well, and that's the first integration, right? As a result of the first integration, because oftentimes being alive means being vitally alive, a vital being, and probably a very strong being physically with great endurance. He was alive and at the same time sensitive and responsive to his environment in a wider and more specialized sense, so he could attune with the attractive or repulsive qualities of the environment and of other human beings. Today, in our Aryan race, Aryan, we remind ourselves, in terms of consciousness and not in terms of any lesser and separative meaning of the word as applied by the Axis powers, especially the German powers. Today in our Aryan race, humanity is occupied with the task of adding still another aspect to that of the mind. So no longer just a vital feeling being, but one who is vital, feeling, and thinking at the same time. We don't realize, those of us who are here in the West, that perhaps living the life of thought is not as common in the mass of humanity as we might suspect. So, to the achieved facts of livingness, that's how he refers to etheric vitality. Etheric vitality as it affects the physical body. To the achieved fact of livingness and sensitivity, he is rapidly adding reason, mental perception, and other qualities of mind and thought life. So what do we have? We have a triple man, living, sensitive, and thoughtful, mentally awakening. In other words, unfolding the third petal of the egoic lotus. And finally, yes, well, maybe not finally at all. We have several additions that we are speaking of making here. We have the next phase, advanced humanity upon the probationary path. And sometimes there is a discrimination where advanced humanity may not yet be upon the probationary path. Certain advanced human beings are not yet, consciously at least, upon the probationary path. Advanced humanity upon the probationary path is fusing these three divine aspects into one whole, which we call personality. So it seems to be saying that if we are in the process of fusing the three aspects into one whole, we are in the ranks of advanced humanity. As I say, there's no cut and dried discrimination between advanced humanity and those who are upon the probationary path, but generally speaking, the quality of aspiration is higher and directed towards what many advanced human beings would consider to be intangible and therefore unreal. So sometimes these two terms can be equated and sometimes they are discriminated. Many hundreds of thousands stand at this time upon that path. And this is interesting when it was written in the 30s, I suppose, but not millions, not yet millions. So he's giving us an idea of the numbers of human beings in different categories. As there is the integration of the personality, we're talking about the unfoldment of the fifth petal. So in a way, he's also saying that hundreds of thousands are unfolding the fifth petal. And I'm going to FFPTL. Oh, FFP. That's how I did it. The fifth petal. Okay. Are unfolding the fifth petal and are acting, thinking, feeling, and thinking simultaneously, making of these functions one activity. This is such a good definition of the integrated personality. I want to really, you know, somehow emphasize that. This is a fine definition of the integrated personality. Acting, thinking, feeling, thinking, simultaneously and not sequentially. Not sequentially. You know, first I have to act, then I have to feel, then I have to think. No, it's all at the same time and not in any rigid sequence. Sometimes you have to say, well, let me think about that. And you suspend your feelings, perhaps. Or let me think about how I feel about that. I mean, these kinds of separations of a focus can occur even in the modern advanced man. Well, let me take action upon that. But oftentimes they are a mixture of interrelated activities, and one is feeling, thinking, and acting all at the same time. This is what the truly integrated personality can do, not necessarily the spiritually integrated personality. I think that's another good term. Let us also use the term spiritually integrated personality. Spiritually integrated personality, as opposed to the selfishly integrated personality. So this personality synthesis comes upon the path of discipleship under the direction of the indwelling entity, the spiritual man. So it is an integration directed by the soul, and not just developing. In the field of the personality itself. We have to be very careful how we switch around in talking about what factors are integrated together, integrated together, and integrated with. So a simultaneously acting, feeling, thinking, a unit of consciousness is not necessarily a spiritually integrated personality. Not necessarily. Okay. All right, that about be about right. But on the path of discipleship. So this can take place, we can say, this can take place on the path of aspiration, but when the progressing integration is consciously directed by the soul, then we are on the path of discipleship. Okay. All right. So this personality synthesis comes upon the path of discipleship under the direction of the indwelling entity, the spiritual man. I suppose there are different phases of the synthesis and different phases of interrelation with the soul. Let's put it this way. There are different phases of relationship between the integrating personality and the soul. And on the path of aspiration, there is a growing interrelationship and receptivity to and following of the soul. And on the path of discipleship, the following of the soul is well established. And the relationship between the integrated personality, which is now becoming spiritualized, and the soul is really proceeding apace. It's not complete, because then we would be an initiate of the third degree moving towards the fourth degree. That would be the complete integration of the soul and personality. This integration constitutes alignment. And when a man has achieved this, he passes eventually through a process of reorientation. So we can say the normally integrating man is not necessarily aligned, especially consciously, with the soul. But a reversal begins to occur. When there is sufficient alignment to indicate the will and direction of the soul. So let's just say that until there is sufficient alignment, there can be no reorientation. I think that's fairly clear, and at certain moments alignment does occur, and a higher stream of energy enters, one that is headed in a different direction, away from identification with matter form, and then an attraction towards this newly sensed energy source begins to occur, because it is, after all, attractive in its own essence, having so much of the second aspect in it, and promises fulfillment, you know, the will to fulfillment on the second aspect of the will. And then there will be a reorientation of the otherwise materially inclined personality towards this intangible something which draws it toward fuller life. So, as a result of alignment comes reorientation. I just want to put that down as a result of alignment, there follows gradual reorientation. So this, I suppose, reorientation reveals to him as he slowly changes his direction, and let's call this the, what do we call this? The reversal of the wheel. The still greater whole of humanity, and so what settles in? A stage of decentralization begins. And one is no longer the most important item in one's content of consciousness. In one's content of consciousness. Because, you know, the ego itself, the lower ego, is an item in the content of consciousness. We are somehow aware of ourselves, or what we take to be ourselves, and we give unusual prominence or privileged place to this particular item in our content of consciousness that we call our self. Well, when humanity itself begins to loom large in the field of consciousness, this little, hitherto all-important item begins to be reduced in its importance and its attractiveness. And we finally are led to say, well, this is for the welfare of humanity. What matters if I, little I, suffer as a result? I'm willing to make that sacrifice. Later, upon the path of initiation, there will dawn upon his vision the whole of which humanity is only an expression. And I suppose, you know, what would we mean by that particularly? I suppose the planetary whole, wouldn't you say? Whoops, if I can just underline this without a problem. All right, and let's call this the planetary whole. Not so much the solar systemic whole, I mean that will come eventually, but the human race plays a particular function within the chakric system of Sanat Kumara, or within the chakric system of the planetary logos, a kind of throat center in a way, and from other perspectives, a kind of ajna center. As humanity advances, it becomes and identifies perhaps more with the fifth ray and also the fourth ray, the ajna center function of humanity, a directing function. Let's put it this way. The ajna center is always a director, and humanity will become a director of the lower three kingdoms. Okay, three kingdoms. Well, I'll just do it this way. The lower three kingdoms will become a director of the lower three kingdoms, and thus fulfill the ajna center function, which is even now attributed to it. Sometimes the animal kingdom is moved up into the position of the throat center, but really it seems to me that humanity is very much a kind of throat center in the planetary logos, although, as I say, in some of the assignments is given the place of the ajna center. Humanity, throat center. Well, humanity, there it is, planetary throat center. Okay, so this is in the destiny of the nations, but elsewhere it is given the role of the ajna center, and I suppose maybe the assignment of ajna or throat center depends upon which type of humanity we are discussing. Whether the avant-garde or the normal mass of humanity. All right. So right away I found a reference that showed us the throat center, but we may remember that when we were working in esoteric astrology, in the science of triangles, we found that the human group had a particular connection with the ajna center. Certainly advanced humanity does, and the new group of world servers, as the symbol of advanced humanity, or as really the collection of the most advanced humanity, does fulfill the role of the ajna center within Sanat Kumara. So this is the subjective world of reality into which we are begin definitely to enter as we become members of the kingdom of God. And when is that? More or less at the time of the first initiation and the approach to the first initiation, because then we become the true disciple. We have entered the hall of wisdom. Initially we are initial members of the kingdom of God. And so, and then the wholeness of things begins to dawn upon us. A decentralization begins to take place from that time on, and the soul becomes the major center in the field of consciousness eventually. Okay, and then we're also talking about integration on the probationary path, the later stages. stages of the path of probation. Apparently, it can last a long time. This probationary path, in a way, can go all the way to the first initiation, and maybe even beyond, in a sense, because in a way we are probationary disciples before we are accepted disciples. It's as if discipleship includes these two phases: probationary, accepted. Sometimes we insert in the middle the idea of simply being a disciple, who is a pledged disciple, let us say. So we are talking about successive integrations as the human being includes one aspect of his energy system after another, one faculty after another. So upon the probationary path, though only in his later stages, he begins to serve humanity. So we say that upon the path of probation at first, man is not yet a servant of other human beings. He begins to serve humanity consciously through the medium of his integrated personality, and I always have to say, you know, relatively integrated. Rest in peace, okay. I'm going to put this in RIP, and I'll call this relatively integrated personality. Okay. Through his relatively integrated personality, because there are these early phases of personality integration which are not spiritual at all. Then we are becoming integrated personalities in relation, integrated with the soul, all the way up to the fourth initiation. So you kind of wonder when we are completely integrated personalities, completely integrated with the soul. For all practical purposes, it would be at the third degree, but even that is not quite complete. There is still further soul infusion which can occur. We have to remember that in a way, soul infusion is the ending of the integration process. They are seamlessly leading one into the other, from progressive integration with the soul into the state of soul infusion of the personality. So words, you know, tend to make us think in terms of sequence, but there are many overlapping factors occurring here. So later on the path of probation, and when would that be? Around the period of the before the first initiation, and even what if we take the whole idea of the path of probationary discipleship beyond the first degree? Maybe it's not so often done, but then of course you would have a servant, an increasingly conscious server of humanity. So later, he begins to serve humanity consciously through the medium of his integrated personality, and thus the consciousness of the larger and wider whole supersedes his individual and separative consciousness. He knows himself to be but a part. And this is already moving beyond the first stage of Leo, beyond I am. The whole gradually becomes more important than the hitherto all important part, the separative and separated personality. It all depends on the direction of our thinking and what we tend to identify as of greatest importance within our field of consciousness, where our real interest lies. Is our interest always reflexively returned to that sensitive center we call ourselves? It's interesting about Leo. It is a sign of sensitivity, and the most sensitive factor at first within our field of consciousness is the little self. most sensitive factor within our field of consciousness is, at first, the little self. But later we begin to, what can we say, feel within others. And eventually, just as strongly as within the hitherto most sensitive factor, the lower personal self. So, you know, one is reminded, I've used it before, but there's the story of the great sage Ramakrishna crossing a river, being taken across a river, and he suddenly starts to say, "Who is beating me? Who is beating me?" And such was his state of identification. Apparently, across on the other side of the river was a master beating his slave, and such was the sensitivity of this sage that he was as much inside the other and feeling as much inside the other individual as he felt within the supposedly all-important center of being, which is the lower personality. So one thinks then of what the Christ said as well, "Inasmuch as ye have done it unto the least of these, you have done it unto me." So there's this extended Neptunian sensitivity which pervades the sentient system of other human beings, such that one finds oneself to be increasingly decentralized and finds one's center of identity as much in them, the apparent them, as in oneself. This is something to be worked for, and I suppose a lot of suffering in the lower three worlds sensitizes us until we are no longer that hard, encapsulated, early Capricornian ego, which, you know, can feel nothing, to the time when we have had our shells worn away. The Cancerian energy is there too. Our shells are worn away and our sensitivity extends beyond our own localized energy system into the energy system of others, apparent others, that we learn are really not others at all. Okay, so this is integration upon the later stages of the probationary path. And the earlier stages, well, yes, it is simply integrating the personality. So pretty much upon the probationary path, considered here in a general sense, the integration of the personality goes on. And in the later stages, there is conscious service. And now upon the path of discipleship, the process of integration into the kingdom of God, the kingdom of souls, proceeds until the third initiation is undergone, we can say, at which point the disciple is no longer the disciple, but the initiate. So integration into, what do we say, integration of, integration with, integration into, these are all words which can tell us something about the stage of integration that we are undergoing. And basically it means, let us call becoming part of something larger and eventually identifying with that larger something, or as that larger something. First we integrate with and integrate into, and then integration as could even follow. I oftentimes use that word identification as. Integration as. that something into which we are merging. But we always have been part of something larger, we've just forgotten it, and we are then re-becoming consciously part of something larger and more encompassing, and eventually identifying as that something. Let's see. Okay, so what have we had here? We have had six stages of integration, all the way from the physical, vital, astral, mental, then initial probationary. Whoop. Okay. I guess I froze my image there. Initial probationary, later probationary, and then discipleship. Six stages of integration thus far. Lemurian, Atlantean, putting it in other ways. Early Aryan, later Aryan, and discipleship, which converges upon the state of consciousness of the sixth root race. Not yet that which has materialized within humanity, but disciples are supposed to anticipate that which is coming. All these various integrations work out in some definite form of activity. We can say interactivity with our environment, our surroundings. First, there is the service of the personality, selfish and separative. Now, of course, we can call this, in a way, an early Aquarian phase. First, the service of the personality, selfish and separative, wherein man sacrifices much in the interests of his own desire. And if this is the case, until this is no longer the case, he cannot take the second initiation. He cannot sacrifice others for his own desires in that initiation and for his own ideals and his idealism. Then comes the stage of service of humanity and finally service of the plan. Okay, so let's service of the self, lower self, service of humanity, service, FV, SV, SVC. Oh, it looks a good one. Let's say that. SV will be now service. I think it's a word so often used, we really have to have something for it, don't you think? And service of humanity, service of the divine plan. We might say, well, you know, why is not service of humanity more important than serving the divine plan? But if one really serves the divine plan, all of humanity benefits in a still greater way, and all will be elevated. However, the integration with which we shall primarily deal as we study the seven techniques of integration is that of the personality as it integrates into the whole of which it is a part, through service to the race and to the plan. So this is the type of study we are undertaking here. We are not interested in service of the self. That is an earlier stage, and it is not our point. So service of the self is not our focus. That the average human being will naturally do, and for many millions of years. So it is the personality, beginning as the personality, as it integrates into the whole of which it is a part. You know, look up along the line and not along the many lines which for ages have held thee prisoner. But look up along the antichoronic line and begin to embrace the whole. Through service to the race first and then to the plan. So we are dealing here with the spiritualizing personality. That's what we're dealing with. We're not interested in the personality simply in its own right. Bear in mind that these ray techniques are imposed by the soul upon the personality after it has been somewhat integrated into a functioning entity. This is so important. You know, when can this be applied? And by what or by whom is it applied? And it is applied by the soul at a certain stage of personality development. These ray techniques are imposed upon the personality, by the soul. By the soul upon the personality after it has been somewhat integrated into a functioning entity. So the first stages of personality integration are not the direct concern of the intervening soul, and is therefore becoming slightly responsive to the soul, the true directing intelligence. Okay. These ray techniques are imposed by the soul upon the personality after it has been somewhat integrated into a functioning entity. So this is occurring let's just say it cannot occur. This type of imposition will not occur before the personality is upon the path of probation. Earlier we saw that the path of probation and that of a path of advanced man were considered similar in this context, considered to be the same. So some degree of aspiration must be rising within the personality before these techniques of integration can be applied. All right. So now we have actually come to the first ray integration formula. I would like, of course, to do these, to give one program to each one of these old commentary sections, but I'm not really sure that that will be possible in the flow of discussion about the integration techniques. So I'll read it first, then we'll analyze it, and I'll read it again. Ray 1. The love of power must dominate. There must also be repudiation of those forms which wield no power. The word goes forth from soul to form. Stand up, press outward into life, achieve a goal. For you there must be not a circle, but a line. Prepare the form. Let the eyes look forward, not on either side. Let the ears be closed to all the outer voices, and the hands clenched, the body braced, the mind alert. Emotion is not used in furthering of the plan. Love takes its place. The symbol of a moving point of light appears above the brow. The keynote of the life, though uttered not, yet still is clearly heard. I move to power. I am the one. We are a unity in power, and all is for the power and glory of the one. Now, as we move through this, we are moving through different stages of evolution. The love of power must dominate. This appears within the personality of the first ray soul, even before the soul has begun to direct the integration process. So there will be always under the impression or the appropriation of first ray soul energy by the personality. Even though the soul may not yet have a directing role, there will be through this appropriation of soul energy by the personality a growing love of power. power is energy expressed in such a way that it will overcome all obstacles. The power to make an impact according to desire or will, the power to overcome all resistance, a directed flow of energy which fulfills desire or will, and of a sufficient strength, a directed flow of energy of sufficient strength to fulfill either desire or will. And at first this can be quite selfish. There must also be repudiation of those forms which wield no power. So the rejecting of the powerless and powerless states. They do not serve. So this is the despising of weakness in the realm of form. And also, perhaps, as regards people who are weak, they are put to the side. If you are a general in an army, you want to set up your commanders in such a way that they will actually achieve your objectives. You do not choose the weak ones. You do not choose circumstances which weaken you. You do not choose to be associated with people who cannot hold the impress of the will which you seek to have imposed or seek or seek to through which you seek to accomplish. So the love of power must dominate. There must also be repudiation of those forms which wield no power. This is growing. Many kinds of personalities in the process of integrating will appropriate this first-race soul power, and it will be true of them, even though there will be a secondary ray, the ray of the personality, because there will be the self-centered appropriation of soul power before that soul power is used for soul ends. This is important because we can use this great source of power in a way that the source itself would not sanction. And this is an earlier stage when we are simply ignorant, really, of where that power is coming from. We just feel it within, and yet the personality is the center of our field of consciousness and all important to us, the most important sensitive point, and we use everything we are given for the sake of this most important center, which we feel to be our personal self. Repudiation, this scattering, this rejection, the rejecting energy is related to the first ray, and earlier in the book he discusses the rejecting, repulsing, scattering energy of the first ray. Now the soul does speak, because we are reaching the stage of integration with, you know. So this is the first stage of integration with, and not just of. So the word goes forth. There is some receptivity to the voice of the soul, because there is some aspiration. How did we put it earlier? He says it must be becoming slightly responsive to the soul. Some search for something higher is occurring. A search for something higher is occurring. So this gives us some responsiveness to the soul. Sufficient to hear it. The word goes forth from soul to form, stand up. Well, to stand, you know, the sitting is of the second ray and standing is of the first. This type of bodily position is specifically related to the first ray. whilst sitting is related to the second ray. You know, you sit for enlightenment, as it has been told. This is a seventh, whether or not it's a good idea in the old theosophical sense, it is belonging to the second ray. If you think about it, well, the story goes, the Buddha sat under the Bodhi tree. He did not stand under the Bodhi tree for 48 hours. He may have gotten up now and then, but the principal approach with the in the use of the body was the attitude of sitting. And mostly when we see meditators, we find them not standing. Meditation is specifically related to the second ray and the sixth ray. I mean, all will meditate on every ray, but it's particularly the second and the sixth ray which approach divinity through meditation as the major means, and meditation is accomplished usually by sitting. Sometimes third ray types like what's called walking meditations. I've been among them. I've tried that. You know, it kind of satisfies the love of activity, which is hard to suppress. So you say, well, I can meditate and walk at the same time, and to a certain extent it may be true. And then there are, you know, the Tai Chi types of meditations which have to do with certain formal actions, and that might be well used by the seventh ray type. And maybe performance is a type of meditation for the fourth ray type. I oftentimes think of the singer, you know, or the artist, or the dancer, along the fourth ray line, involved in a meditation which is a form of performance through the form, per form, or expression. Fourth and seventh rays have a lot in common in that respect. So the word goes forth from soul to form, and you know, it's really interesting. Sometimes this term word is capitalized, sometimes not, and I think it always should be. This word, or this term, is not capitalized, but probably should be, as happens, it seems, randomly in the other stanzas. So it is the word of the soul. It is the communication from the soul to the personality. And it doesn't seem to be justified when the word goes forth to have it sometimes in the lower case and sometimes in the higher case. It always seems to me to be the same word or directive of the soul. It's not the full appreciation of the divine word, but at least it's an aspect of that. The word goes forth from soul to form. Stand up. So assume the position of the first ray type who stands in spiritual being, press outward into life circumstances, right? Into life circumstances. And this whole press and pressure, the first ray applies pressure, not a forcing power is applied. This is not a gentle movement forward. It's a deliberate moving forward in strength and repelling obstacles. If you press forward in life, watch out. Watch out for what's in the way. Or at least if you're in the way, watch out. So, and it's outward, too. The accomplishment must occur upon the outer planes. Upon the outer planes. And if you think about it, the 137 line is a ray line which has to do with objectivity and with form and with work with matter. The strictly subjective rays, the 246, now, this doesn't mean that the 1357 types will not turn inward, will not meditate, will not seek subjective counsel, but at first, their work is within the outer world. Even if you think about the Manu on this first ray of great abstraction, his work is to strengthen the forms of matter so that they can withstand the spirit. His work is definitely upon the Vulcanian physical plane. So when you apply pressure at a point, it is a Vulcanian first ray act. The application of, I could just spell and type, of pressure at a point is a Vulcanian act. And Vulcan, a powerful first ray planet. Achieve a goal in a very one-pointed way. The first and the sixth ray have a lot of the one-pointedness, but usually the one-pointedness of the first ray is rather wiser and more effective. Achieve a specific goal in the outer world. Do not worry about embracing the many at this point. That may come later. For you, there must be not a circle, but a line. A line which moves directly towards the fulfillment of the will which you intend. There is an objective. There is a configuration to be achieved. There is some, Master Moria said, I always recall it, he said, bring me an achievement. Bring me an achievement. So you move in a forward manner directly toward the goal and destroying all obstacles. I will destroy all obstacles, says the first ray type in these Blessed One stanzas that we have worked on before. For you, there must be not a circle, not the embracing circle. We will see that the great opposites are the line and the circle, in a sense. And the second ray type will always work with the circle as an important symbol and method of motion. Encircling, encompassing, embracing, including, all of these are circular motions. But the first ray goes straight to the goal, and later, you know, when it begins to absorb some second ray qualities, may become more embracing of those that it has oftentimes destroyed along the way. But the first ray is not really, when rightly used, going to destroy consciousness. It's going to destroy some of the forms through which consciousness was working so as to restore better, more powerful, more suitable forms. So follow your vision and achieve a goal directly. So move directly. And we do know that the first ray is called, in its monadic aspect, the director. The second ray, the teacher. The third ray, the manipulator, on those monadic levels. Direction, moving directly, straight. Straight is another one of those words, straight to the point. Don't beat around the bush, you know. There's not so much tact involved here. There is not wasting time, a movement directly towards the objective. So the circle and the line, and think of these two. Think of the circle and the line as representative of the second ray and first ray methods, respectively. All right. So the soul has spoken, and it says, stand up and receive the impress of the will and be ready to act, because in a state of standing, you know, you're much more ready to act at a moment's notice than you are in a state of sitting. You know, how it is when you're sitting, you say, well, let me get up and then I can do that. When you're standing, you're ready to do. You're ready for action. And press outward. Press away from yourself. Press forward in order to impress outward into circumstance. Achieve a goal which is conceived by your vision and to be implemented by your will. And go straight there. And do not waste time by circling around. Now, there's still more soul advice. Prepare the form, and we might say, this is just what what the Manu and his department does. They prepare the racial form. They oversee the evolution of the form so it becomes ever more suited and sensitive even to carrying the subjective energies. We don't want the form to give way, to fall apart, to disintegrate when the soul and spirit come closer to it. And this, of course, is a great possibility. DK warned us that many of our forms, human forms in the Western world, were just not suited yet for the carrying of occult energies because they had been improperly raised with the wrong diet and even the unsuitable exercise. They could not bear the inner fire. So prepare the form so that when there's an attempt to bring spirit into matter, the matter does not just fall apart, does not disintegrate. Let the eyes look forward. Well, you know, sometimes third ray eyes are looking from side to side and off into the great beyond, and the second ray eyes are looking on more compassionately and in an embracing manner. But no, the first ray eyes simply look towards the fulfillment of the goal, and concentration is not broken by side issues, we might say. First things first, you know, first things first, and there is always with the first ray type this great sense of what is priority, not all things at once, but one thing after another, done in such a way that the thing done supports the next thing, and that thing done supports the next thing. So there is not a crumbling of the edifice. This is the Vulcanian method of building. The building aspect of the first ray, there is such a thing. So let the eyes look forward and not on either side, just have this unbroken intent concentration, which is not emotional. Intent concentration, not emotional. Because the sixth ray can also look forward with intensity, but also with a great deal of that magnetic energy of emotion, devotion. Not on either side, so let your concentration not be broken, because let the will be applied with fullness, undiluted fullness upon the accomplishment of the objective. And for the ears, it's the same thing. You know, generally there's such an intent concentration. Let the ear be closed to all the outer voices, which means closed to distraction. One must not be deviated from one's intent. You know, the second ray, as second ray types have the listening ear. And they take in from all sides. They try to be receptive. But this, for the first ray, is a posture of temporary non-receptivity. Because it will distract, dilute, deflect, in some way prevent full impact. So doing all to repel or not to receive that which would prevent full impact on the objective. The impact of all the powers at the disposal of the first ray type directly upon the objective, so that there is no dilution of strength and the accomplishment can occur expeditiously. I sometimes tell my first ray friends, well, you know, there's no need to use a sledgehammer to squash a flea. There has to be some kind of measurement of forces. And of course, Shambhala is tremendous for co-measurement of forces. It is the power that touches and then withdraws, and that withdrawal is, the touching and withdrawal is exquisitely timed, and so is the amount of force released. But in the early first ray experience, there can be a kind of use of too much force for the particular objective. That has to be measured. But anyway, not to be distracted. And the hands clenched, now this is the fist, this is the Vulcanian attitude. It's the hammer, the fist as a hammer, Vulcan-like. As the hands clenched, when you clench a fist, clenched hands represent the concentration of power and the non-dissipation of power. You know, if your fingers are giving, if they're open, if they're doing all different kinds of things, the power is spread around. But now with clenched fists, you have the maximum impact. It may not be very skillful and manipulative, but at least you can make the maximum impact with the fist. If you compare, let's say, punching someone or slapping someone, well, the punch is obviously more powerful. So let there be concentrated power in the hands, right? There be concentrated power in the hands. And no waste, no dispersion. Because the fist, in a way, holds in. I remember one of the teachers did say, well, a clenched fist has naught to give. And of course, the truly giving hand is something else, isn't it? You open the hand to give. The clenched fist is holding the power within for the sake of some specific objective where the full impact is required for the achievement, the accomplishment. Okay, then the body braced against impact, let's see, in readiness, and also against the counter energy, because it will happen. The body can be braced in readiness. Have you seen, you know, there's a certain tense alertness, we might call it. Tense alertness the runner, the vaulter, or in athletic events. One does not go from a relaxed position immediately into action. No. One goes from a tensed position into action. So the body is braced for action. At the same time, the body can be braced against the impact of the counterblow. But maybe that has not yet happened here. And the mind alert. So alert to every step that has to be taken to achieve the goal. I sometimes have read about these Navy SEALs and how they carry out a mission. Of course, so much is instinctive with them, but the commando has to be so mentally alert. And every minute, the mind is occupied with the goal and with what the environment offers either to facilitate that goal or to interrupt it. So there is this very powerful executive mind alert, instantaneously alert to all changes in the environment as those changes affect the accomplishment of the goal. The mind alert. Emotion is distraction. You know, as DK has told us that first-rate people tend to despise emotion but sometimes have to be brought into a condition of emotion if they are going to learn to live a fuller life. We sometimes see that. I remember maybe no commander in the Second World War was more feared by the Axis powers than General Patton. You know, some kind of reincarnated Roman warrior and actually having the memory of those battles. So he he was a great moving machine, irresistible. He was always having to be held back by the field commander superior to him because he would have run on ahead. And yet he was a very emotional man. He easily burst into tears, and he was known for his spontaneous displays of emotion. But in the case of this executive action, emotion is not used in furthering of the plan, because emotion can distract, can take one aside, can prevent a proportional measurement of forces which are needed in the proposed achievement. So there is oftentimes with the first rate type the suppression of emotion, you know, just nothing but the facts and the job to be done, because feeling for or against will be an interference. DK talks also about the relation of the first ray to the onset of cancer, and how there were so many abuses in Lemurian times of the sexual energy that the Atlanteans used the first ray to suppress that energy, realizing that it had led to all kinds of excesses and disease and great trouble. And in that suppression, in which the first ray plays a big part, the disease cancer arose because there was not an outlet, a proper outlet, for the suppressed energies. Anyway, emotion is oftentimes suppressed. You know, what did you feel like when you were carrying out this commando raid, let us say? Well, I didn't feel anything. I just did my job, one thing after another. There may have been a sense of excitement, but no other feelings, per se. Not reactions to this and reactions against that. Instead, love, which the first-rate type has to cultivate, takes its place. So, purposeful action under the influence of a greater love. That is the motive for the developed first ray types. So love of the heart, remember the heart has this quality of the first ray and of the second ray. The heart is a great center for the first ray type. They do have to cultivate that wide embracing love, and the word, one of the words of power for the first ray here in these integration techniques will be found to be the word inclusion, which is such a really a second ray word. So each tendency of the ray types has its own antidote, and it often comes from a ray which is quite different from itself. Just the way, as we'll see, the second ray word of power, which is centralization, takes its root in the first ray. Something the first ray can do so well is to centralize. Something the second ray can do so well is to include. So they are antidotes to each other, these first two rays, which are in a way like pairs of opposites. So it's not these solar plexus distractions of for and against and bias of some kind that is used in furthering the plan, but a larger type of love which will serves. So let's just say that here, that will serves a larger type of love, realized, not immediately, realized eventually, eventually, under the impulse of the soul. The we will see here when we study this first ray integration formula how the first ray type regains love. Well, maybe as a monad, you know, somehow on higher planes, all of these qualities are part of the possession of these great spiritual beings. But it is forgotten in the lower worlds. All right, and then we notice something else, that a symbol of a moving point of light appears above the brow. Now, the brow has so much to do with the sense of direction. We have seen straight direction is so important for the first ray type. This doesn't mean they don't have strategy and cannot learn to wait until the right moment, because the will has a strong connection with patience when that will is properly exhibited. You know, one does not want to hastily ride into the jaws of death like General Custer did, when a more prudent or rational type might have assessed the circumstance. So the symbol of a moving point of light appears above the brow, and it's almost like the unicorn's horn, we might say. Think of it as the symbolic horn of power and direction of the unicorn. It has to do with seeing the vision and having the power to move towards the fulfillment of that vision. You know, this oftentimes the stare of the first ray type involving the Ajna center is very powerful. You know, it's undeflectable. So a certain undeflectable excuse me, power develops here at the brow center. Now the brow can, of course, there are many centers here, as we are told, seen in some of the books on Laya Yoga. So are we talking about the Ajna center only? Well, it cannot be sure that we are, but anyway, there is a brow force here, and one can think of the initiate on the first ray really having the tendency to become the unicorn, which has this extremely potent directed force. And it's going, it illuminates the goal, it illuminates the objective, it goes straight to the objective and has the strength to achieve the objective. Sometimes look at the area around the eyes and the brow of those who are specifically first ray types, and you will perhaps see the kind of expression that I'm talking about. The keynote of the life, though uttered not, because, you know, let's just say, oft times, first-ray types are men of few words. They don't need always to be talking. Let's just say action takes the place of talk. And Vulcan, their planet, the planet of men of will, is not a verbal planet. As a matter of fact, DK talked about Vulcan being involved with some centers near the throat, which had more to do with the inarticulate types, and which went out of power when the greater articulation of the throat center came in. Now, of course, this doesn't mean that first-ray types do not speak. They can be great orators. Look at Churchill. Some combination there between the first and the fourth ray and the sixth ray involved with his strong Sagittarius energy. A great, great orator, and obviously a first ray type. But let's just say that one doesn't need to be telling others what one's keynote is. The keynote is demonstrable. Excuse me. The keynote is demonstrable through one's actions. And the first ray type is the true occultist, the true man of action, as it has been said. We don't just sit around thinking about it all the time or pondering what it might be like if we did act. One of our colleagues talks about the cafe at the edge of the cliff, where it's kind of like a coffee house, and you sit around drinking your cappuccino, discussing what it might be like to jump off the cliff. Well, maybe that's more for the third ray and second ray types. The first ray type walks up to the cliff and jumps off the cliff. Doesn't have to talk so much about what it might be like if he did jump off the cliff. The keynote of the life, though uttered not, yet still is clearly heard by all who are impacted by this energy. In other words, let's call it speaking through action. I move to power, and that line above the Brow is a movement towards power. I move towards the acquisition of power to accomplish the higher will. Let's just say that without power, the will cannot be accomplished. Or that which one wills cannot be accomplished. I move to power. And this, of course, is coming at a much later stage. I am the one. It's a later stage of realization, wouldn't you say? A later stage of realization. Because, you know, one must be quite integrated and fused before one can say, I am the one. Well, one can say in lowercase, I am the one, I'm the one at the center, I am I, let other forms exist, I rule because I am. But if one says, I am the one, that's isolated unity. That's beyond the third degree. That's actually consummated at the fifth degree. So you see in these stanzas, we oftentimes move through a great deal of time. It's not as if we are speaking of a process that is occurring in one localized moment. It often spans a developmental period. I am the one. We are a unity in power. We, so because I am functioning as a soul, I know that I am we. So I and my colleagues, we are a unity on the plane of soul, and we're working under the first ray, and we unite ourselves the better to express power. We unite ourselves, if I could just get that earth scheme, LVS, the better to express power and achieve the plan. We are a unity in power. In other words, I am no longer solo. I work with others who share, in the soul sense, the same objective. So it's like the team. It's like the commando team or the army. We, together, united by the divine power descending. And all is for the power and the glory of the One. Who are we serving? We are not serving our lower ego anymore. We are serving the planetary logos, aren't we? We are serving. Ah, that'll be serving. SVG. Why not, huh? If you can save time, hopefully it does. We are serving the planetary logos, the One. Of course, you know, eventually we'll serve the solar logos and so forth, but in soul I unite with my comrades on the same ray, we in the same ashram, we dedicated to the same task using the same first ray energy. We are a unity in power, the power of the first ray soul, and all that we do is for, not for selfish personal objectives, but we are in a state of isolated unity, and we perceive the One and the will of the One. And when the will of the One is achieved, in power we have the glory. When the will of the One is achieved through the right use of power, we have the great glory shining forth. Well, I know I'm well over, but I did want to do, yes, oh, I'm well over, well over. But I wanted to do this, and I'm not finished yet. I have to read this for us. Love of power. The love of power. Here it is. So I'll read it, and maybe I'll just say a couple of things and then read it straight through. Even at the early phases, the love of power must dominate, and it will, as we appropriate power from the inner first-ray soul. The love of power must dominate, otherwise the task cannot be accomplished. There will be insufficient applied energy to accomplish the will, either our personal will or the higher will of which we are becoming aware. There must be must also be repudiation of those forms which wield no power because they do not serve the achievement of the objective. The objective will fail, and the one thing that the first-rate type does not want is to fail in his direct path towards a specific achievement. The word of the soul, goes forth from soul to form. It's carrying a certain energy. It's not just advice, like do this, it's actually carrying the energy to do it, because it's the first ray that is coming through any particular personality. Stand up, as first ray types do, and receive the energy straight through the head center and all the way down to the base of the spine. Press outward into life, use Vulcan to press forward, get rid of all obstacles. If anything is in your way, press forward and get it out of the way. Achieve a specific goal. A directive. For you, there must be not a circle but a line, and the circle will come later when there's a rounding out of the being. Prepare the form so it's strong enough to withstand the subjective energies, that the eyes look forward, not on either side, not to be distracted by other possible visions or objectives, that the ears be closed to all the outer voices, because many voices can give different directions, and you know what is your direction because it's coming from within you, and the hands clenched for the concentration of power and maximum impact, the body braced in readiness, the mind alert to sense all possible deviations in the environment, all possible interferences. The mind is alert so that one thing after another, the mind can be used to accomplish the objective. Emotion, which is often so attractive or repulsive, is not used in the furthering of the plan. It would just get in the way, and this time, we are serving the plan, not just a plan, a personal plan. We're serving the plan. Love of the heart, and in a larger sense, eventually takes its place. We destroy and we serve in will for the sake of a larger sense love, which comes in because we are listening to the word of the soul, and the soul is always love, regardless of what its ray may be. The symbol of a moving point of light appears above the brow. I've thought about which way this light moves, but I think it's straightforward. And there's a great power concentrated at the brow, so our objective is illumined, and the strength to achieve the objective comes oftentimes right from this radiating center, the undeflectability of the individual from this radiating, directing center. The keynote of the life, which is going to be stated, though uttered not, because why waste words? Instead, put action, put your intention into action, yet still is clearly heard by all who really observe how the individual acts. I move to power, to accumulate greater power, because that power will help me have sufficient energy to accomplish the inner directive, which is my responsibility. I am the one. Isolated unity has come. I am identifying not just with my little oneness, but with a greater oneness, and it's as if I act with the strength of the one and on behalf of the one and even as the one. I am the one. It's almost like the master is speaking, but we cover a lot of ground here. At least the initiate is speaking by this point. We are a unity in power. The soul and my personal self are a unity in power, and all my comrades on the plane of soul with whom I act are a unity in power. But at least soul and personality, I didn't mention this before, but soul and personality being integrated together are unified, and together a great power on behalf of the plan can be asserted, because soul and personality are united, and all that I do, and all that we do together, soul and personality, is for the power and glory of the one which I am. All right. The love of power must dominate. There must also be repudiation of those forms which wield no power. The word goes forth from soul to form. Stand up. Press outward into life. Achieve a goal. For you, there must be not a circle, but a line. prepare the form. Let the eyes look forward, not on either side. Let the ears be closed to all the outer voices, and the hands clenched, the body braced, the mind alert. Emotion is not used in furthering of the plan. Love takes its place. The symbol of a moving point of light appears above the brow. The keynote of the life, though uttered not, yet still is clearly heard. I move to power. I am the one. We are a unity in power, and all is for the power and glory of the one. It is inspiring, and we will go on here. It's already almost an hour and a half on this program, but it is. And it didn't seem right somehow to break it. You know, you don't want to break the first ray. I was forced to do that earlier. Because the internet failed when I was right in the midst of a first ray stanza. Didn't want to break it at all, but listen, this is the end of Techniques of Integration Webinar Commentaries, number 4, Esoteric Psychology 2, and page 352. Page 352, and we'll be beginning of Techniques of Integration Webinar Commentary number 5. EP 2, page 352. All right, well, you know, every one of us can apply these stanzas to our own process. You can see here that, you know, you say, well, I'm already an integrated personality. I'm already integrated with the soul. But remember, of course, that doesn't really complete until the fourth degree. And to a degree, it may be so. You may already be integrated with the soul, but toward the ends of these stanzas, we get some very high directives, some very high possible realizations, which are appropriate for initiate consciousness. And if you think about it, the truly integrated personality doesn't even complete until after one is already a true initiate at the third degree, and still there is more fusion and more integration of the systems going on all the time, even up to the fourth degree. So this integration of the two energy systems into one energy system and of the two consciousnesses into one fused consciousness proceeds until we are ready to dispense with that treasured limitation we call the causal body. So these stanzas have a wide and good application for all. We cannot say, oh, we've outgrown that. All right. So we'll see you soon, and we'll keep going with number 5.